Sam Panayanovich is in our studio. Sam, there's a couple of things I got to clear up before we get going here.
Sure, sure.
Our conversation with Sam is always sponsored by PointsBet. Let me give you this piece of paper here. I want you to hold
on to that.
Ooh,
I love paper. Can I turn it into a plane or a brooch, maybe a pterodactyl?
When's the last time you made a paper airplane?
High school?
I'm making one right now.
I'm sure PointsBet would appreciate us making these into airplanes and tossing them.
This is the thing that says Sam's conversation is sponsored by PointsBet. I'm now making a little pointy airplane. I'm folding the wings down. Gosh, I haven't done this in years. I still know how. Much of my grade school year is at Holy Family Grade School in Honolulu, Hawaii, and at the N.O. Nelson Middle School in Edwardsville, Illinois, were spent doing this.
You're like that magician who says, I don't know, I'm pretty rusty. I haven't done this in a while. And then he shuffles the cards behind his head.
Look at that. Look at that.
Ooh, that's nice. Toss it.
There it goes.
Oh,
not bad. And then you could do the blunt edge ones that we called bats, and they would fly crazy loop-de-loops. Did you used to make paper airplanes?
No, not really. I made a couple, but mine could never fly. I needed a pilot for mine.
Well, if I said I would just sample the president's voice from his speech to the Economics Club, I think it was of New York, although when I was watching it online, it looked like there were people from around the country on this Zoom call. The president was speaking at the White House, and then people on the computer screen were asking him questions. And the president, for I don't know how long he spoke, I think it was it over an hour? Was it close to an hour? Anyway, they're asking him questions, and at times his voice seemed hoarse and gravelly, and at other times, once again, this is yesterday, it just gave out.
Instead of corrupt and horrendous trade deals written by lobbyists and special interests, and some of you, I negotiated pro-American trade deals based on the principles of fairness and reciprocity. I ended the NAFTA nightmare and signed the brand new U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement into law. I've taken the toughest ever action against China's chronic trade abuses that we all know so well. Simply put, it's a choice between a socialist nightmare and the American dream.
Just doesn't sound like Donald Trump. And I don't know if he's kind of blown his voice out because he's doing rallies. He's still recovering. I mean, I'm not even interested in this part here of talking about whether or not he's contagious or infectious. It sounds like he's not. But it just also sounds like he's not back to full voice strength. And so if he's going to sit down for 60 minutes tonight, Joe Biden gets 90 minutes this evening. One of the reasons NBC said that they're doing it is not to sort of counterpunch the other network or to give the president the debate that he actually won't participate in. They said, we already gave Joe Biden an hour-long town hall meeting, so it's only fair that we give Donald Trump an hour-long town hall meeting. And I understand that. But it looks like counter-programming when you put it up against the Joe Biden show. So now you can't hear from both of them at the same time. But I think that's a quibble that most people are making who aren't really interested in watching the two of them anyway. 14 million of us have already voted. There's about 7 people who are undecided. While 70 million people, give or take a few, watch the presidential debate, only about 6 or 7 million people watched the Joe Biden town hall meeting. The president, this is my prediction, will get to crow that more people watched him tonight than watched Joe Biden this evening, at least for the 60 minutes that they share. But I don't know that that matters that much, right? Ratings don't vote. It's people who vote. And I don't know that either of them are going to move the needle much. They say that the format will favor Joe Biden because he's more a sit-down, relax, just talk kind of guy. Donald Trump benefits more from the, on-stage rally or the thing where he can literally counterpunch the guy on a stage. But since Trump has already done that, I think you can also make the argument that the sort of sit-down, relax, take Joe Biden out of the room and just calmly sit down and talk to this man. And then he can spin whatever narrative it is that he wants. But this will give Donald Trump a chance to take some of the steam out of that last debate. So maybe this is a good format for Joe Biden, but tonight I think it is the format that the incumbent needs as well. So there's your spin on the two town hall meetings.
Well, we can weave some election betting into this too, just to piggyback off what you said. You mentioned the turnout and the voters. These are actually offshore betting props. Now, we can wager on the over-under percentage of voter turnout The number is 60.5, 60.5%. Would you go over or under?
For the election total, well, 60, what's the number?
60.5%.
Now I need to know what it is normally. But we always, America always disappoints me. I would take the over.
Okay, it's an even bet, minus 110 each way. And then the other number, the amount of voters, over under 150.5 million voters.
150 million voters?
Mm-hmm.
150 million voters?
150 million voters.
Well, that sounds like a lot. But again, you don't have the number that voted in 2016.
Well, the population is 328.
Yeah. So, yeah, but not all of them are over the legal voting age.
Right.
I'm going to go with, I'll pick the over just because I can't imagine a more energized electorate than we have right now.
138 million Americans voted in the 2016 presidential election. So the market, the sports betting market in the UK, is taking that number, 138, and they're putting the number up for 2020 at 150.5. So
yeah,
they're expecting 12 million more, 12 and a half.
Yeah, I think I'll. Then again, you have maybe the. If people are discouraged because they think the president isn't going to win re-election, then maybe they don't turn out. And Joe Biden isn't exactly inspiring, right? They say that you're more likely to get people to come out if they love a candidate, not if they hate a candidate. So, that's interesting, Sam. I think I'll still take the over.
I will say this: it has never been more expensive to bet on Joe Biden. And remember, you can't do this legally in America, but you and I have talked about this going back to last fall in October before the DNC purge. I said it again because it happened. Biden at that point was 10 to 1 to win the election. So 100 made you 1,000. Look at how far he's come from last October, November, where he's now at Paddy Power in Ireland. He's a minus 250 favorite. So you have to risk 200 to win 100. Minus 250 implies that Joe Biden has a 71% chance to win the election.
Do they do the popular vote wagering as well?
They don't do it, but one book in Costa Rica has Biden minus 1,000 to win the popular vote. So you have to risk 1,000 to win 100.
So is that 90%?
90.5 or 91%.
To win the popular vote.
Correct.
And the other one to win the electoral.
So that's where we're at. And again, this is removing any political bias. This is a market that's driven by money.
And not necessarily by Americans.
If they're on vacation, yes, but we can't go anywhere. So this is foreign money in a foreign market.
Yeah, watching our thing.
I get dehumanized by this stuff, man. I told you last night. Like, sometimes the math outweighs the emotion. And I find myself at times being cold-hearted because of this industry.
I want to ask you about that in a minute. Plus, let's talk about some of the games people are playing. What are we hearing about football and baseball and whatnot? Sam Panionovich talks about wagering sports and sports wagering with us. We'll continue our conversation in a minute. I want to hear your big bet of the week. I want to hear what you say about the Bears and what the markets are saying about that in a minute. But let's just finish that thought. So every now and then we get so caught up in the numbers and the money that we forget these are people, these are athletes, these are human beings.
Yesterday, Alabama head coach Nick Saban, one of the greatest coaches in the history of the sport, the news breaks late in the afternoon that he has COVID-19. He's tested positive. And the average American goes, oh, I hope he's okay. I hope he's all right. I hope the players stay safe. But in my world, I get 4 emails and 10 texts going, hey, psst, what does this do to the point spread? And I guess that's the life I live. That's the path I've carved. But at the same time, I immediately have to respond to 10 people about what this does to the betting market. And I'm like, oh, well, you know, Nick Saban's probably worth a point or two to the point spread. And I'm like, wait a minute. Can I breathe and just react to this like a normal human? But I guess I can't because that's what I do. It's weird. And it's even weirder because Alex Smith, the quarterback of football team, formerly the Redskins, he broke his tibia and fibula 2 years ago, and they said he would never play again. He had 17 surgeries. He almost died because of an infection. He almost lost a leg to amputation. He comes back on Sunday, plays 2 quarters of football. They weren't great quarters. But now there's a market on who will be the comeback player of the year. And guess who the heavy favorite is? Yeah. Alex Smith. But I think to myself, wait, he wasn't good. He played 2 mediocre quarters, and there are other candidates that have played better. But now I'm in that mental pretzel where is it about the math or is it about the emotion?
Well, in this case, maybe it doesn't matter because the math is going to be predicated on the emotion, right? That is, people are going to vote for whoever their heart wants to win the comeback player of the
but
year.
But there's also recency bias involved. He just came back 4 days ago.
Yeah.
So if he never plays again this season, and Ben Roethlisberger, who, by the way, missed 14 games last year with an elbow injury, he's on a first-place team, 4-0, 10 touchdowns, one pick. He's the better player, and he's also gone through adversity. He wins the award 100 times out of 100.
Yeah.
But Alex Smith has, you know, the heartstrings attached to his story. It's a better story, but Roethlisberger is the better player on an undefeated team.
So give me the number on the Bears, then. What are we saying about their game against the Panthers?
Nice call on Brady's under last Thursday, too. Woo! Nailed it. Are you 1-0 this year?
Yeah, yes. But take that to the bank.
You nailed that one. PointsBet put up 264.5 passing yards, and you said, oh, I like the under. And your brother, didn't your brother bet like $1 million on it?
He did not.
Oh, okay.
He did not.
$2 million. You nailed that one. But back to your question, Bears and Panthers, very similar situation to where we were last week in the fact that people bet on Chicago in the market. Tampa Bay was a 6-point favorite, and then that number closed 3, 3.5. So there was support in the market, big bets on Chicago. Same thing this Sunday. Bears go to Carolina to face the Panthers. Carolina was a 3-point favorite, and now Carolina is -1, -1.5 at points bet. So even though the action is sort of split, the bigger bets have come in again on Chicago.
What are they saying for the total points scored?
44.
You like
44
that?
To 45. This is probably the first to 20. I think this game is 20-17 either way. I don't love them going on the road, but I also don't love betting against the Panthers quarterback who has played 23 games as a starter. He's covered 19 of 23. That's pretty good, right? 19-4 against the spread. I don't like the game at all. I know a lot of the people like the
teaser. You
don't
like the game at all because you just don't think you can know if they're going to cover.
I think it's a weird game, and Carolina has a very young team with a rookie head coach, so I'm definitely not betting Carolina, but I also missed +3 on Chicago. Like, now it's 1, so what happens if the Bears lose 23-20? I'm going to lose because I have a bad number.
Is the problem with any Bears game this year, you still don't know how good the Bears are?
I think their defense is incredible, and if you look at some of the advanced analytics and the metrics, they're a top 5 defense in a lot of these categories, and they held the Buccaneers at bay. That offense did not look good. Brady didn't look great. I think defensively, Chicago is going to be in most of the games this year. But my biggest question, of course, is the quarterback and how consistent will the production be at that position. And I still don't have that answer.
So what's the margin on this game again?
It opened Carolina -3. Now it's Carolina -1 or 1.5.
So what does that mean again? So they're saying that Carolina...
Essentially flip a coin. Who wins? You give Carolina the point and a half for home field, because Chicago's on the road.
I want to make a bet where I make money if the Bears don't win the Super Bowl.
I think you'd have to risk a whole lot of money to win a little, which I would not advise, because they're 40-1 to win the Super Bowl.
Right, but that's you betting on them to win the Super Bowl. I want somebody to give me money if they don't.
You realize you'd have to bet 6,000 to win 100 or something like that.
Yeah, right. I don't think the Bears are going to win.
I like it the other way. I like it when you bet 100 to win 6,000.
Yeah, right.
That's more fun.
Okay, but you don't think the Bears are going to win the Super Bowl.
I do not.
Would you take then that bet at 40-1? I mean, would you put money? No, that's them to win, right? Yeah. Well, okay, right. So, in other words, if I put $100 on the Bears to win the Super Bowl at 40-1, do I win $4,000?
$4,000.
Yeah. I'm not going to burn $100 that way.
Especially when you think about where the number was before the year, 60-1. You could have had a better price, but I just don't think, knowing full well that they're not going to be a top 2 seed in the NFC, the path becomes so much harder. And I don't think they're winning the division. So then they'd have to win 3 games in a row on the road and then win the Super Bowl. And the mathematics do not support that.
Bet of the week?
Somebody had $1 million on the Saints on Monday night. And I'll do my best to keep the story short and sweet. So $1 million, they have to win the game. Saints go down in that game 20-3. So if that person watching that game, you know, imagine the emotions. You have $1 million on the line and your team goes down 20-3. With a minute left to go, the Saints are down 7, 27-20. Again, picture the better, $1 million, down a touchdown. They score the touchdown to make it 27-27. The Chargers come down the field and attempt a game-winning field goal. $1 million on the line. He doinks it off the upright.
No.
And the Saints win in overtime. Talk about a roller coaster.
So is that money bet to win $1 million or it's $1 million?
It was $1 million to win $445,000. Collect 1.4.
So every week you just amaze us with these things. And I just guess there's a population of people out there who have so much money that a $500,000 or $1 million bet to win not much more than that is entertainment to them.
Could have, should have lost $1 million, end up winning $445,000. So that's a $1.4 million swing.
But then I bet that guy takes that $400,000 that he just made and bets it next week, right? Like I would say, honey, we're retiring. Now we have $1.4 million. That plus Social Security and a modest pension, we're good to go. I'll bet that's not this guy.
Probably not. And let me take it next level, and I'll try and keep this, you know, as easy to understand as possible. The biggest issue with the gambling space is that they let somebody like that walk up to a window or log into an app and bet $1 million because it's a dumb bet. But professional bettors, they are extremely limited or kicked out of sports books for winning. So if you're a successful bettor and you constantly win, you can't bet $1,000 on a game, let alone $1 million. If you have a track record of winning, you get limited or kicked out. And those are the rules.
So this is maybe not a person that's spending.
These are mostly high players, whales, in casinos. They're, you know, people that come in and gamble $10 million on baccarat or crops, craps or blackjack or whatever. So these are players that are gamblers, not mathematical wizards as far as bettors go. There's a difference between a bettor and a gambler.
What do you mean by that?
A bettor is calculated. He doesn't bet with emotion. He bets with the math. A gambler is like, oh, I'm going to throw $2,000 on black. There's a difference there. And the casinos will gladly take the gambler's action, but if you win and you're a winning bettor, you can't get $1 million down.
Mike wanted to ask a question. You're on WGN. Mike, what can we do for you?
Yeah, well, the Bears are interested in a running back, named Le'Veon Bell. There's other teams that are interested. What are the odds that the Bears land Le'Veon Bell?
Very good question, Mike, and I'm glad you brought this up. He's actually the favorite to land with Chicago. Now, these are also available
They're
at PointsBet.
They're betting on whether or not he's going to be a Bear?
You can bet at PointsBet who will the next team be for Le'Veon Bell.
Okay.
And the Bears are the favorite at plus 450. So, Mike, if you bet $100 on Le'Veon Bell to go to the Bears, you win 450, collect 550. Are you interested?
Hey, sign me up. I'm betting.
Okay. Okay, but King, this plays into the fact that not only can we bet on who wins or the money line or the total, but you can bet on this stuff, which is derivative and more exotic. Who will Le'Veon Bell play for next? And yeah, the Bears are the favorite right now.
See, I would be interested in, if he becomes a Bear, what are the chances the Bears will win more games, or they'll beat the Steelers or something like that?
Their Super Bowl number would go down a little bit. If it's 40-1, maybe it's 35-1 after he signs, if he signs. But the Bears are the favorite to sign Bell. Eagles are second, Chiefs are third, Cardinals are fourth. This is a fluid market, and this will move depending on the money.
John Williams, Sampanianovich, that guy James from Jeopardy is the textbook definition of a bettor, not
a
gambler.
Yep, absolutely, because that guy doesn't get drunk, have six shots of whiskey, and go, ooh, I'm going to bet on Coastal Carolina tonight. He does his homework, he prepares for his bets, and he bets with conviction.
Is there wagering on college football coming up now?
There is, yes. I mean, you can wager on college football right now.
Yeah, but the games that I'm interested in aren't even playing yet.
Well, you can't bet on Illinois.
But I wouldn't be able to bet on Illinois or Northwestern anyway.
Because of the legislation. You cannot bet on a college event in the state.
That's the state law that says you can't do Illinois teams, college teams, if you're an Illinois resident. And I guess your phone knows where you are, right?
You can't bet Illinois teams, but you also, like every winter, there's a big college basketball tournament at the United Center when it's usually Duke, Kentucky, Michigan State, Kansas, whoever. You can't even bet on those games because it's inside Illinois.
And the theory is that because a college kid might be more susceptible to somebody's other motivations.
But you can bet on Wisconsin, Nebraska. You just can't bet on Northwestern. It's weird.
Yeah, but I mean, but I guess the idea is you would run over to the United Center, grab one of the kids from Duke, and say, "Hey," right? I mean,
well, I'm not grabbing any of the kids.
But you see what I'm saying? That because those aren't Illinois teams, so it must be the physical proximity issue.
This is what the state wanted. The state wanted to protect themselves.
Are other states that way?
No, yeah. Most of them aren't. They just want to take your bets, take your action. But you cannot bet on a college team from Illinois or any college event inside the state.
What if I drove...
You have so many questions and we have so little time.
If I drove to Wisconsin, could I bet on an Illinois game?
I don't think it's legal in Wisconsin yet, but you can drive to Indiana and bet on
that.
Illinois.
I could do that.
And points bets in Indiana, too.
Do you have much to say about the World Series or the baseball playoffs?
Rays look really good, man. 3-1 lead. They did lose last night, but that's a really good team. Fundamentally sound. They pitch the baseball. They catch the baseball. Timely hitting. Great manager. I like Tampa. And in the next series, or in the other series, the Dodgers down 2-1, and Clayton Kershaw gets the ball tonight for Los Angeles. He's their ace as they try and even the series up in the National League.
So who do you like in the World Series?
I like Tampa. I do. I just don't believe in the Dodgers, and they love to choke when it counts. Big bet, or not big bet, my pick. I like Georgia-Alabama.
Oh, right. Okay, this
like
is where
the,
we
I like the under. Yeah, well, a bit okay.
Georgia-Alabama. That's who we're betting on? Or
I like the under 56.5 points.
Is college seeing the same scoring uptick that the NFL is this year?
Alabama scored 63 last week.
Against
yes.
who, though?
Ole Miss.
Yeah.
Well. 63-48. There were 111 points. But guess what we're doing this week? We're going under Alabama.
All right, Sam, we are out of time. Nice to see you, my friend.
See you, bud.
That's Sam Panayanovich.